Good evening. I apologize that we're starting a little late tonight. It is 5:39. We're opening the Planning Commission meeting for Tuesday, January 22nd. If we could start with our introductions down on my far left.
Good evening. I'm Rick Shattuck from Central Kitsap.
I'm Kim Allen from South Kitsap.
Aaron Murphy, North Kitsap.
Tom Nevins, North Kitsap.
Joe Phillips, North Kitsap.
And Gina Buskirk from Central Kitsap. We do have two new members who will be joining us soon. If you had not heard already, Shelley Knipe will be South District number 2. She's not present tonight, but she will be a great addition here, as most all of you, I think, are aware, a recent retiree. I don't know how long it's been now, from the Kitsap County Prosecutor's Office, Civil Division. And Mike Eliason will be representing Central District number 3, so hopefully we'll have them at the next meeting. First thing on the agenda are 2019 elections. We'll be having elections for both the chair and vice chair. Just for anybody new, I know a number of you have been through this before, anybody can make a nomination. Any nomination does require a second to be valid. Any person who is nominated may accept or decline that nomination. We give you a choice. Accept or decline the nomination. You can speak to that nomination or not, or just let the process go on without any words being shared about it. When voting takes place, if there's more than one person that's been nominated for a position, we'll go through the voting process. Please only vote once for a position. And then if we do have a tie, we have to re-vote until that tie is no longer there. We can have a discussion along the way if we need to. So that being said, do we have any nominations for the position of chair? We'll fill that position first.
Well, I would first like to say that there's no offense to the present chair. I think you've done an excellent job. I always appreciate having new people do that job as time goes on. And I think it's a wonderful opportunity of self-growth for anybody on the panel of commissioners to take that job. And so I would like to place in nomination Richard Shattuck, Kim Allen, and Aaron Murphy.
We will also be filling vice chair. So I
understand.
And thank you, Mr. Nevin. You also challenged me with some personal growth when I took over the vice chair, chair position, to which I am actually grateful. I was a little nervous at first, but grateful for that opportunity. We need a second to it.
If I can interrupt, actually, you're allowed to nominate one person, and then everyone else has a chance to nominate, and then it comes back, and you can make additional nominations.
Okay. I'll redo the nomination then. I'll do it one at a time.
I want to appreciate the confidence in me, but I've got some family challenges down in Arizona this year, and so my schedule may be off, so I respectfully decline, but again, appreciate the confidence.
Okay, and in that case, I will nominate Kim Allen as chair.
I'll second.
It's been moved and seconded. Do we have any other nominations for chair, or do we want to handle this and move on to vice chair?
Oh yes, I'd like equal opportunity for people who have not yet declined. And so Aaron Murphy is my second nomination for chair.
And I will respectfully decline, just based on the age of 4 children at home at the moment.
Okay.
All right.
I think we can by acclamation.
Okay. It's been moved and seconded that Kim Allen be our chair for this next year. To Kim, do you accept the nomination?
I will accept the nomination. It's a great group, and I appreciate the opportunity to take us forward into 2019.
Great.
Building on your model, Madam Chair.
And those before me. All right. With that, I am going to see. We've closed the nominations. All those in favor of electing Kim Allen to be our chair for 2019, the year of 2019, please raise your hand. That is unanimous. Welcome, Madam Chair.
Thank you.
Before you get to go, I get to do one last thing, though. So I get to do the Vice Chair as well, and then I am more than happy with you taking over if you'd like. So now we need to open nominations for Vice Chair. Are there any nominations for the position of Vice Chair? And the nice thing about this position is you get sort of the training wheels. You get to learn from the chair for a whole year.
That's true. It's a lighter duty job.
Trying to sell
even
this.
Even if you have four children at home, I think you could probably handle it.
Here it comes.
So therefore, I will start again, nominate Richard Shattuck for Vice Chair.
Thank you again. I respectfully decline.
And then I will nominate Aaron Murphy for Vice Chair.
I would accept that nomination. Thank you.
I'll second the nomination.
All right. It has been moved and seconded that Mr. Murphy should be the Vice Chair. Do you have any comments that you would like to share with us, anything other than accepting the nomination?
No, I just accept it and thankful for the opportunity, and this is the start of my second term. Mr. Gelder has asked that I continue, and I had accepted that back in December, so I think it'd be a good move. Thanks.
I'm going to go ahead and close the floor. Well, are there any other nominations? Hearing none, I'm going to go ahead and close. Any further nominations? All those in favor of Mr. Murphy serving as the 2019 Vice Chair, please raise your hand. That's also unanimous. That was easier than some of the other things we've done over the last couple of years. Yeah. All right. That being said, go ahead and pass along to Miss Allen now. I feel like there should be some ceremony here.
Yeah, right. Yeah. Don't use that gavel.
There you go. Congratulations.
Thank you. Play music or anything?
Like the graduation mark, pomp and circumstance.
All right. Well, with that, we have gone through items A and B on our agenda. Item C, I look for a motion to adopt the agenda as presented.
Move to adopt the agenda.
Second?
Second.
All those, any discussion? All those in favor signify by raising your hand. Opposed? Passes unanimously. All right, we have two sets of minutes, and we apparently are having some software issues that are resolved, but additional time is needed to bring those minutes forward. So we're looking for a motion to postpone the approval of both sets of minutes from 12-18-18 and 1-8-19 to the next regular meeting.
This Gina will move to postpone the minutes. I almost identified myself as the city of Bremerton right there. Move to postpone the minutes.
Second.
Okay, any other discussion? All those in favor signify by raising your hand. Opposed? Passes unanimously. All right. On to the work study session for the wireless code update. We have Darren Gurney here to do that presentation. Welcome, and the floor is yours.
Well, thank you, and congratulations.
Thank you.
For the record, Darren Gurney, Kitsap County DCD, and project lead for wireless communication facility code update. And once again, I have the pleasure of being the only person on the agenda for you this evening. But very grateful that you're making the trip down here from the north end going through that traffic in Gorst. Tonight we are in our third study session out of the three that we had planned. And this tonight is very much for answering questions from the previous two sessions. There will be some slides with some images as requested in the last meeting. But really it's going to be a question and answer session towards the end. In preparation for our hearing on the 5th. So, slight delay on the projector there. So as I mentioned, we had our first two work studies. Those were to introduce the concepts, the work plan, and the new standards that are now in play as of January 14th. On the 8th, we discussed the preliminary code that you were provided. And for this meeting, we are looking into the staff report. If you had any questions, we had preliminary feedback that was provided with the staff report in an attachment for you, in attachment C. We revised some of the code that we presented on the 8th. Those revisions are reflected in the red text that is underlined or struck through. We also highlighted in that draft items that were per FCC standards and not really able to be changed. So some of those definitions, modifications, substantial change, some of those things were pretty much set in stone. As we move forward, as we mentioned, we're responding to our federal standards and finally updating our code after about more than a decade since the code had been revised. So that code, it addresses the permits required and the design criteria for tower-based facilities, non-tower facilities, small wireless, which is that newest FCC standard, co-location. There's general development standards that apply to each of these. We also identify exempted and prohibited. Guy wire towers are prohibited in the code. We'll have an example image of that later. Maintenance and repair and abandonment. We have gone through these in fairly good detail in the last meeting. So, if you'll remember the last meeting, I said that this table was the heart of the code. It has been revised. It doesn't show it in that red text, but in that draft that you received, if you can see the arrow, those two sections under new facility and support structure, those allowed for some performance-based criteria to be introduced to allow different types of towers with less of a permit requirement.
A quick question. Letter of exemption is the same thing as a permit or different from a permit? I mean, you apply for it, and it gives you permission to do it, but...
Letter of exemption has prescribed criteria associated with it that allows you to be exempted from a land use permit, but you are not exempted necessarily from a building permit or right-of-way permits or franchise agreements. So that is specifically for the land use portion. But that alerts the county to the fact that there is a permit in the system. We can coordinate with Public Works and IS and let them know that there's this permit coming through the system that you have possibly 60 days to review and come to a decision. So this is just examples. And some of our definitions, you're talking about substantial change. One of them is defeating the concealment element. So that's what this image is meant to represent. And the easiest one I could find was a palm tree, so my apologies. but if you had a palm tree that was constructed as a macro site tower, and then you start adding these things onto it, does it defeat the concealment element? That's one of those parts of the substantial change. Other things are height, width, the equipment, if you're installing new equipment, changing the size of it, or if you're modifying the or not complying with the original conditions of approval of a permit. Not all of them are as blatant as this, I promise. So related equipment, you see in the definitions we have related equipment. You also have screening requirements. This is kind of an example of what we're talking about in terms of trying to screen the equipment. For a small wireless facility, you also had in our earlier presentations examples of where equipment can be mounted on the poles. It can have a little bit of an underground element to it. These are the things that we're talking about when you're trying to shroud the equipment. It's typically these elements on a pole, not necessarily shrouding this entire piece.
I have a question, Darren, on the shrouding. Do you just mean it, because typically on like a pole-mounted installation, there would be an equipment box. The radios and the other equipment would be inside a box that's painted to match the pole. Is that what you mean by equipment shroud?
Yes.
Okay.
So this is just an example from City of Denver of their shrouding requirements.
Okay. Okay. And then the other question I had, because you have a picture of the strand mount there, I don't recall, is there a provision for strand mounts in the code?
We do not. Yes. But that's not to say that the code can't include that. If we come through public hearings and somebody mentions that we should be allowing strand mounts, I wanted to make sure and make that aware that strand mounts are a possibility. And we do not address it in our code.
But they're not currently addressed by the code?
Correct.
Okay.
This thing keeps skipping. And just as a disclaimer, I am providing all the image source websites underneath the images. So I'm using some examples here. This was a diagram that was prepared to show different types of facilities. You have at the very top a tower facility, rooftop that's more like a non-tower wireless on top of a building, this outdoor distributed antenna system. That's a type of small wireless facility where most of the extra equipment is located in one source. And then you have the small cell. It's hard to see here on the screen. They are enlarged in future images here. But you have a small cell pole that is not part of a DAS system. So the cell tower, again, just a diagram. This shows that you can actually have co-locations. So these two different elements, if you had the first part of the tower built with that very top piece, and then you can co-locate a facility below it. That is part of that table that we showed for permissibility. If it doesn't substantially change the tower, that is part of the 60-day permit process. Yes?
No, I thought I saw someone with a question.
Okay. So in terms of the way that the code changed from the last presentation, existing towers within 500 feet, and those that are disguised as a tree or another natural feature, they get the benefit of, instead of doing a conditional use permit, they go to the administrative conditional use permit.
Darren, within 500 feet of what?
Another tower. Yes.
On that point, over the years, of course, siting cell towers has been a huge issue. And you have neighborhoods saying, not in my backyard. So what we're basically saying here is you lost the battle once. You get another one, you don't get a public hearing, you're just going to happen. There's an administrative CUP rather than a full-blown CUP. Is that?
It is a reduced permissibility. It's from the interpretation of the department, if you already have a site with a tower and you're getting those sites located closer together, it's not a co-location, but it effectively is trying to minimize the distribution of those visual impacts.
Well, from a neighborhood point of view, of course, they may have a different feeling about having a plethora of towers in their neighborhood as opposed to one they fought with, and it's right. Disguised or some other thing. So that
can be something we address during discussion and deliberation, and if we hear comments in public hearing as well. Yes.
I'm hoping this is a moot point, but. Is it clear in the code that that's also on the same property?
No.
Or is it literally anyone?
It is a distance. It is not based on the same property. And that is, of course, subject to change.
Just so I understand, if you are proposing a new tower within 500 feet of an existing tower, you go through less process than if you are siting further away.
And from what I was told, that's similar to how we approach it in our code today. And if the tower doesn't qualify for those two other possibilities, then it still goes through the full CUP process. I will mention that it still allows for public comment. It still goes through the conditions of approval. The only difference is that it is not through a hearing examiner.
But there's no public hearing. There's no opportunity for the neighbors to come into a public hearing and testify to their concerns.
Not for a hearing examiner.
What? Is the administrative CUP process, there's a hearing? I'm not aware of any hearing for Nate.
I believe it's just a public comment period.
Yeah.
So disguised as a tree or other natural feature. So if if someone wanted to put a tower on, say, a church property and disguise it as a steeple or something, an additional steeple,
yes.
Would that qualify for the...
That is actually in one of the slides. In the
okay. So, yes. It says natural feature, so I... That
and that may be some language that needs to be massaged on that part. So, getting into the towers, starting with the most impactful towers are typically the guide wire towers. Currently, these are prohibited in the proposal. And these are rare to occur, but for multiple reasons, we've put that into a proposal as prohibited.
Darren, are they allowed now, guide towers?
I believe they are.
Okay.
I will have to double check to make sure.
We have one at the fairgrounds.
Right. Could you repeat that?
One of the guide wire towers is at the fairgrounds.
Yeah.
So we do have it.
Okay. I'm just thinking that, you know, we are a rural county, and just having gone through the horrific windstorms that we've had, I mean, if there was a showing of, in say, an industrial area or a rural area, that there was a need for guide wires to have proper stability.
Right. And again, that is a good thing for us to discuss when we're going through the deliberations process of what we've heard from the public versus all the things that we're doing now.
Now, what we're proposing here is that we don't put any more guide wire towers to support the 5G wireless, correct?
That is correct.
Now, if there is a guide wire tower in existence, is it allowed to be used?
It's illegal non-conforming use, yes. And if you co-locate and it's structurally allowed to have certain elements on it, and you co-locate, you can still add antenna to it unless it doesn't comply with conditions of approval previously.
For the record, Dave Ward with DCD. My understanding is that we have not received a request for guide towers in this county for over 10 years. So there's not a lot of demand for the guide towers. The other thing that impacts the placement of guide towers is that they, because of their height, they are required to be lit. And we do have lighting restrictions in this county. So it's actually a fairly limited area where they're even allowed right now by nature of their lighting. Because the demand is low, because they have high impacts to wildlife, because of the visual impacts that they have, and the battles that communities usually go through, that's right. Why right now we've just outright prohibited them for a variety of reasons.
Could you flag that as an issue on the issues matrix for me? Something to discuss further.
So flagged.
I want to maybe. I'm thinking about the public safety implications, because these kinds of towers typically are public safety driven things. And I know that there's a FirstNet initiative rolling out now to increase public safety, to add to the public safety network. And I don't know how that lines up with guy wired towers, quite frankly. It's outside of my day to day. So I just would like to just flag it as an issue.
And we did receive, through the preliminary comments, we did receive that feedback as well. We just felt like it was best to facilitate the discussion, get that into the deliberation stage, and then we can actually go through and discuss further. There are a couple examples of towers. These are within the county. You have a lattice structure tower that has two different sets of antenna arrays. You also have, it's an odd monopole, but it is, it's shorter, but this is a macro array. This is in Silverdale. This other tower is in South County. The related equipment you can see is screened by this fencing. So that's part of what we're talking about with the code in terms of screening. You have generators and electrical components down below here. Okay, this is the fun part. I told you I'd have a picture of a cactus.
Palm trees and cactuses.
Yes. So, stealth technology is meant to be compatible with your surroundings. This is an excellent example of attacking that. And those two cacti are false. Those are towers. And they fit in with their surroundings. The underground component has all the backhaul equipment, the generators and such. But you have that here, and that doesn't necessarily blend in with our surroundings, so not all stealth technology fits. Picture on Silverdale Way. In this context, you have a large Doug fir. It's a tree or natural feature, so that's one of those that we would do the reduced permit requirement. I'm sure many of you already know, but that is the feature in the landscape. Going into non-wireless facilities, we have a rooftop site here shown as a diagram. Non-wireless can also include installing on a tower already built. It's a co-location. You're not building a new tower. It's just co-locating. So you're allowed a letter of exemption for new co-located facilities if there's no substantial change. This is conflating two different issues here, so let me know if you're needing explanation. If you do have a substantial change, like we discussed before, it requires more permit review and if the structure was not previously approved for the facility, it would require an ACUP as well. I'm going to go through a couple examples here. So these are rooftop structures. And this is in South County on top of a water tower. You could actually build the water tower and the facility at the same time. Don't quite know what the permit process is for that yet.
I want to get back, if I could, looking at these photographs. One of the things, again, that's still striking me about this code, Darren, is the tree cutting. And it may not be a big deal to some people, but I think that helps add a sense of community. And still in the code, the proposed code we have is that tree cutting shall be done per industry standards.
Yes.
And I have no idea what the industry standard is. Can I put that? Does that tree have to come down that's in the photo there? How far away from a small cell facility can I have vegetation? What can I have trees close to a stop sign or a stoplight if there's going to be a tower or a facility on it? What is the standard? Who's telling us who this is?
So what my understanding is, what I've been told, is if you have the design standards like Silverdale, that requires a tree to be certain height and width, or you, in terms of trimming procedures, that takes precedent over placement of a facility.
That's not what the code says. The code says trees shall be cut to industry standards. That's what you're proposing. And so before, I would hope we would say, sure, let's adopt whatever the industry comes up with. That's what we're going to do. Let's make sure we know what those standards are. Because, again, if it's clear-cut everything within 500 feet of any stop sign with a cell tower on it, I'd like to know that.
I'm unaware of any industry standards with respect to tree cutting. There's nothing standardized that I know of, and typically when you're placing small cells, you wouldn't cut down any trees.
That's what I was informed of, that typically you're not going to be installing them where the tree would be an issue. But I do understand your concern on that.
Yeah.
So that I didn't have specific language to go by, so I didn't want to change it at this time. But that I will flag that one as something for deliberation.
Was that the previous language?
We did not change the language since the last one. Or are you talking from existing code?
Existing code in general. You know, the question is, if it wasn't even there before, need you say it at all if it only opens you up to misinterpretation?
Okay. Note taken. Are we okay to proceed? Okay. Another example of the wireless facilities where they can be used as a stealth element. This one I actually included. It technically is a tower that is stealth, including this cross here for the church. We also have examples where this structure within the building is a little bit taller, has a little parapet to it that houses facilities on four sides going out. And then an example of just a very simple aesthetic treatment that makes it less intrusive, as if you didn't know. Small wireless facilities, if you remember from the diagram, you have two different types here. Letter of exemption, if it is placed on any existing structure, and if it's a new structure that is being built, that would require the ACUP process for visual, partially for the visual analysis to make sure it is not going to be impactful to the neighborhood. Okay. And pulling from one of our previous presentations from the industry, the small wireless facility, you have your antennas. So part of this is the definitions. We have antenna in the definition, very clearly defined because of small wireless facilities referencing this definition. The radios and termination boxes are part of the related equipment, the power disconnect. And fiber is required to go to these sites. I believe there was one mistake in the article that was provided that said fiber was not necessary, but fiber is required.
Darren, on your previous slide, the word dark fiber, was that intended to mean the allowed color versus some other definition?
That means the same provider on both ends of the fiber, the same entities on both ends, so it's a dedicated strand.
Okay.
So with that, that was the information that I had for tonight. But I did expect to go over any questions, comments that you may have for the staff report, the SEPA checklist.
Yes, I will ask a question. Early in the code, there's small wireless systems are prohibited on single-family residences or any residential accessory structure. And it probably has something to do with the emissions or the radio the emissions that these devices give out. What is the standard distance that one must be away from these emissions to feel comfortable?
I don't know the standard distance for the EMFs. Part of the residential was also for the aesthetics of a residential neighborhood.
In some neighborhoods, particularly somewhat rural, there might be some advantage to going to a place where power exists and is not available on the street. If we're going to roll this out countywide, it might be an advantage to have it on a house if it's not harmful.
I see some of the industry representatives sitting in the audience. Perhaps they will respond to that at the public hearing and give you an idea of those standards.
Any additional questions? I see some,
oh, I have
some
an issue.
Furrowed brows, so yeah. I just want to make sure that I'm getting all the information that we can out here.
Yeah, one of the issues that I have is the small wireless facilities are typically a letter of exemption. That's an exemption from the land use code. And yet there's a provision in there that a letter of exemption can be appealed to the hearing examiner. A couple of problems with that. One, there's the shot clock is ticking, and it's 60 or 90 days to approve that. Getting it through the hearing examiner process is not feasible in terms of timelines. And then if it's a letter of exemption from the land use process, arguably it's appealed to the land use hearing examiner maybe isn't a good fit either. And I just would like to flag that as an issue to look at. I want to make sure that, you know, county is set up for success in terms of meeting the timeline.
So something we are looking into is whether we have the ability to waive that appeal. I'm not sure at this point if we do have that capability, but it's something we're looking into right now. And that may change the permissibility table because, as we heard from Mr. Smith, Jeff Smith here, last time planner, he did mention that if we had to go through appeals and those were part of that shot clock requirement, then we would not likely make some of those timelines.
Given the range of the small wireless and the size of the county and the fact that there's competition in the field with several different carrier agencies, some I don't even know the name of, what is the department capable of number of permit or exemptions of, that are capable of handling in short order? What if... 600 applications come through at one time. What does the department intend to do about that?
At this time, we don't know our capacity for that specific of a number, but we do have the ability to hire a third party if something like that comes through. Of course, we'd have to be very quick in reaction to that.
It looks like you have 60 days from the time they decide to lay this at your doorstep to get that together.
Right. And many of those, so the, from my understanding, the theory behind this is that those applications are going to be very similar in nature. It's not going to be like a tower and then a small wireless facility. They all have to be the same.
The way I read it, the way I read it, it looks like some of the devices can be put on existing power poles, light poles, etc. Some of them can be standalone features that have to be sited, located in the public right-of-way. That seems like a bigger job than I can imagine the county being able to handle. And you're running up against that clock by the federal law.
Right. I think, actually, that's a really good point. So I'm looking at Silverdale, Central Kitsap. And so the way these are located, you don't just put one or two in Silverdale. You'd need, I don't know how many you'd need in Silverdale. But presumably, no one's going to go one at a time. They're going to say, okay, I want to set up a 5G network in Silverdale. Here's the repeaters I need on these poles, and you got 60 days. So I think we should, at least maybe at a public hearing, get some information about what is the, you know, what are we, should we be ready to handle to roll out 5G?
Right. And that, I will say that is one of the points of contention that is in the courts right now, is jurisdictions saying that they don't have the capacity to handle this number of permits and limiting the number in terms of batch applications to a certain number per batch. But again, the premise is that these applications, you're going to receive a batch of one of those categories. It's not going to be three different categories.
Well, and arguably, this is, I raised the point last time that the code does provide for hiring contract planners to come in and handle volumes like that and to pass those costs through to the applicant.
Yes.
I have a question. In looking at sort of the height allotments, it says not to exceed 40 feet taller than surrounding tree height and not to exceed 200 feet.
Yes.
I'm trying to picture, I know we have existing towers, like the one that's the fake tree. Do you know how tall that is? I'm trying to envision, what are we dealing with? What are we bringing into the county? Because we've said, perhaps for entirely different reasons, the example of the guy wire that you showed us was 200 feet, and it really looked awful.
It was.
I think it said 200 feet.
One of them was, yes.
Okay.
So there's a couple of things with the height that affect the height. So, yes, as you noticed, the language changed to allow for, instead of 125-foot max height, we went up to 200. Above 200, you're getting into the requirement to light it for FAA standards, and that's why we kept it below the 200 mark. The 40 feet above the tree line is to allow for co-location in the future. But in terms of the height of the tower, you're also required to screen it 75%. So 75% of the height of that tower, you would need to be able to screen with the natural vegetation around it, most likely the trees. It's not likely you're going to have buildings to screen that. So the height is dictated kind of in three different ways. That tree, I don't know the exact height of that tree. I can find that out because it is a good point of reference. There is a new tower that just went through a hearing examiner that went up to 183 feet, I believe. It's located in South County. Oh gosh, I'm drawing a blank on the location, but we do have some towers that get up to that height because of the mature tree heights and soil types and what you're expecting the trees to grow to. It all factors into it.
I think the other one that comes to mind, there's like a off the freeway, a flagpole between Silverdale and East Bremer.
The one on Wagga Way?
Yes.
Yes. I did not include a picture of that one. But that is another example of
it. May become very, very patriotic with a lot of flagpoles around
town. But now it's my understanding that the majority of the towers that are needed or stations needed are going to be lower. Your macro towers, which are your cell towers, are not the main thrust of your 5G system.
You will definitely need to get more of the towers, larger towers, to provide the basic
coverage.
The basic coverage, and then those smaller facilities are amplifying to give you more capacity within that coverage.
Okay.
I believe I'm getting that correct.
So. you're hoping that whatever plan that the provider puts forward is going to be tailored so that you don't have to mix those categories.
I would have to check, but I believe that they have to be in the same category to do the app. So each application has to be part of that category.
So, you know, as a provider, I think they're going to come forward with a whole plan. You know, I don't see them saying, oh, we'll figure it out as we go. They're going to have a whole plan developed. So we're asking them to divide that up into the categories. To match that?
And the batching, I believe, is only for the small wireless facilities.
The batching is only for the small facilities. And typically, providers wouldn't come in with an omnibus plan for an area. I mean, they might for the small cells for chunks of it, you know, batches of it. But typically, they wouldn't include, like, the towers that would be needed in that area, too. So and the batching is only limited to the small ones.
So. Yeah, on the screen, the things we're talking about batching are multiple applications of attaching these to an existing pole or putting up new poles or new structures that are going to house those. So the permit review is not the ACP necessarily for different types of permits.
Do we have any sense as to... forget the micro piece of the puzzle, but back to the macro. How many more towers do you think Kitsap County needs based on what 5G is supposed to provide? And the reason I ask, I go back to the 500 feet not being on the same property. Now I start looking at every property around a property with a tower. What's that worth to somebody?
Right. I do not have an answer as to how many towers we would expect.
Okay.
Just following on what he said again, this 500 feet is the same problem I have. You have all kinds of cell towers on mini storage lots. They're a nice fit for a mini storage facility. But I've got neighborhoods around those mini storage facilities, and I put something in 500 feet. I've got a guy with a piece of vacant land. He says, geez, I'd like to make some money. Let's stick it here in the neighborhood. It's within 500 feet. Neighbors don't get a hearing. They have a sign up. You see the sign, great. But other than that, I hope the neighbors, I know you got some postcards out.
Yeah, you still do have noticing requirements.
But it's not stoppable.
It's not the same as having an opportunity to what started off at a mini storage facility is now two towers down into the neighborhood because you're within 500, 500, 500.
Yes, and so part of my response to that is those facilities still have the 150 days that were allowed, so we are able to go through the appeal to the hearing examiner to get that 150-day window to process the permit.
Another good point, though, the way it's written or not written. Currently, once my tower is 495 feet away from the last one, now guess what? Everything 500 feet away from the new one has the same argument, don't they? Right? We could march on down the road and blow through every neighborhood.
That is true.
Shouldn't be.
Okay. So we are kind of getting to the deliberation side of things here. So,
agree with my colleagues on this, that from a community standpoint, it doesn't make sense to have an expedited process if you're siting your tower within 500 feet of somebody else's tower.
I feel like it has to be on the same property, or it just needs to be written differently. Yeah, that feels really scary.
Yeah, I wouldn't be uncomfortable with omitting that.
Okay.
That incentive.
Or if you keep it, let me know which properties to go buy. I'll start shopping.
Yeah, I mean, I could see that on an industrial property. On the same property, that you might want to have more than one tower and that you could have an expedited process. But kind of apart from that, it seems like it would be impacts that the county would want to deal with the neighbors on, I think.
I can visualize three places off the top of my head where there's a mini storage within 500 feet of a 80-lot short plat of houses. 500 feet is quite a ways, so.
I appreciate the input. It's necessary. So,
other questions? I just want to take a moment to speak to the article that has a link in the staff report. It's an article written by an individual named Rusty Monroe. And there's a lot of inaccuracy in that article, and it was also written before the latest FCC order, so I would read it with a grain of salt. Mr. Monroe does not have an engineering degree or any college experience in this field. I would take it with a grain of salt and read carefully.
That being said, it's worth a read, however.
Yeah. The FCC has had significant impact on the statements made there.
One final note, we do plan to hold an open house immediately prior to the hearing, starting at 4 o'clock in the chambers. If the chambers are unavailable, then just outside the chambers. We plan to have some boards available with some of the images for explanation. And you're, of course, welcome to attend that in the beginning, but I imagine you're all going to be very busy then. If you do meet somebody who is interested about the code, we will have that open house for information purposes on February 5th. And our comment period will be extended all the way through until February 12th through the online comment form, should anybody not want to come and testify or not be able to.
Can we get some more pine trees and less palm trees?
You can put that in the comments if you like.
The cactus, they're well done.
That's right. More Saguaros. Proactive.
That's right. Okay. Darren, do you want? Is there anything else you need from us tonight?
That is all I have for this evening.
Well, very good. With that, we will close item E of the agenda for this evening and move on to the administrative update.
First off, thank you, Dave Ward, for the record, from DCD. First off, thank you for all your feedback. This is very helpful as we work on this and develop the code better. We really didn't have much as far as an administrative update this week. I did want to follow up with you on the Code Prioritization Committee, which convened last year, and two of our members, Tom Nevins and Joe Phillips, were active participants in those meetings. Thank you very much for your participation in those. I think you both played a very valuable role in bringing your experience as planning commissioners to those discussions. The committee has gone through and developed a set of criteria by which we can begin prioritizing code suggestions. So we are now taking those, bundling them with some administrative considerations that the department needs to think about as it prioritizes code, things like workload, risk, risk management, all of those sorts of things that any bureaucracy needs to think about. And so then the next step on that is to run all of the code ideas that we have on our existing list through that, and then begin to see what floats up as things that we want to move forward. The one thing that we are looking at moving forward, in while that process is going on, one of the things that we are considering moving forward, and we're having discussions with the board on this, is to begin looking at an update of the use table. So that way we can look at the use table and the long, long laundry list of footnotes that we have attached to that use table, which I haven't seen anybody express joy over. and some of them are clarifications, some of them are actually implementing directives in the code, and so we think there's some repair there. And if we take that on as a first swing at the code, that alone would eliminate just over 40% of the things on the list. So there's some maybe some merit administratively in looking at that. But the Code Prioritization Committee, we have basically wrapped up the work with the committee, and now we're combining it with the department's administrative criteria, and then we'll take that back to the Planning Commission and back to the board. Joe?
And you should mention that you've greatly reduced that list.
Yes, that's true. The list is a lot smaller than it used to be. When we started this process, we were actually over 200 items on the list. Depending on how you cut the list, it varied. We've done some consolidation of some of the proposals on the list because some of them were repetitive. I think you might recall early last year, the board adopted a batch of administrative housekeeping type items that you all reviewed, and then we've done some other consolidation. The department has gone through and has simply struck a few of them that were internally developed, that circumstances have changed and ideas have evolved over time, so a few of those have disappeared. So the list is a lot shorter than it used to be, so we feel like we're making progress on this kind of daunting laundry list of things that were in front of us. Still very much a resource management challenge for us, trying to figure out how do we get through these and how do we process these better, but we appreciate the assistance of this committee in helping us pull together some criteria, some truly community-based, community-derived criteria that will help us decide what to float up to the top and then what we can put on the back burner for a little while longer. So, any other questions on that?
Yes, this is not related, but it has to do with land use and what I would think would be the Department of Community Development's business. There's a rumor about a land use decision that you might not have had anything to do with, or was created by the state, where creative use of a boundary line adjustment has formed a subdivision of a sort. Up the hills to the west of Highway 3. I think the name of it is Baxter or Bendix or something like that. 100 plus homes, private roads. Curious if the department knows anything that they can share with us, and how the state might have been able to do this without your participation.
I'm not familiar with one by those names. I know that we do have a few examples of boundary line adjustments that have changed the boundaries of multiple properties like that. So there could be an overlap there. Right now, the state code for boundary line adjustments governs because we do not have a boundary line adjustment ordinance in the county. And that has been something that has, with the development of some of these much larger movements of property lines, that's definitely something that the department is taking a closer look at. And we need to have the discussion with the board to decide how the board would like to move forward with that.
Okay, so in this discussion, does the department know what is real and what has happened, or where is the information?
That particular one, usually we get the flag on it when somebody actually makes an application for a land use permit. Okay. Because boundary line adjustment does not require a land use permit. The department is not flagged when a boundary line adjustment is made. Okay. We don't have any mechanism to alert us ahead of time. Okay. So we usually find out when an application comes in. And so that would be development services side of the house. So I know of some of them personally, but I don't know. I can't claim to know of all of them. And the names that you just mentioned there are not names I'm familiar with.
I'm just going on faulty memory. I don't really know the name, but it's I know the location more or less and of where this person was talking about, and looking at a drawing of private roads that service 100 one-acre lots with a lot of common space somehow.
Right.
Anyway, it's outside the urban growth area, by the way.
Right. Understood. Yeah. That's the challenge that the department is seeing, is that where these things are going on outside the boundary lines. Some of them are creating substantial numbers of substandard lots. Okay. So one final note for administrative update. We are preparing a draft report from the Planning Commission to the Board of County Commissioners. Last time we pulled this together in March, we're hoping that once we get past the hearing for the wireless communications infrastructure, that we'll be able to bring that draft to you for your review. So that would probably be when is the hearing?
The 8th.
Okay, so it would probably be the subsequent meeting. So that'd be the second meeting in February. So, and we'll get that to you ahead of time so you can review it before discussion. Thank you.
Good. Thank you. All right. And is there anything else for the good of the order tonight? All right. With that, we are adjourned.
Well, don't you want to swim?
Jeez. I just got.